Good morning and welcome to Radio Rehab with Lisa Scythe, who is a professional private counselor with Integrity Psychological and Counseling Associates and an adjunct professor with the Social Work Department at USI. Radio Rehab is only a support to the real work of recovery and does not offer definitive answers or attempt to counsel anyone in their own personal behavior. Although the program does not endorse any program of recovery, it holds the belief that most recovery works are an effort of true conviction and concern of the benefit of the suffering and can be trusted to offer real hope and better choices. And now Radio Rehab with Lisa Scythe.
Good morning and welcome to Radio Rehab. It's always a pleasure to be here and talk to folks and listen to you share with us some of your stories and concerns and questions. So it's exciting to be here always, and we're grateful for the opportunity. I am especially excited today because there is somebody that has been my shero and role model for all my life that I finally convinced to be a guest on Radio Rehab. I've only tried for 3 years to get my sister, Shirley Siegel, on Radio Rehab. But, you know, she's from that generation of women that were ladies and feels like, I don't know if I have much I can share on Radio Rehab. And I said, are you kidding me? You have a sister that's been addicted and in recovery for over 30 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. You've had lots of friends that have had children and grandchildren and neighbors. Now you know that people have problems with all kinds of addictions, not just drugs and alcohol, but tobacco. Her favorite one is shopping. So, you know, it goes into every family at this point. So I can't wait to hear her story because she's a true lady of grace that I could only hope to aspire to be like, really. So I can't wait to hear her story and the things that shaped her, the things that are important to her. And I know you will enjoy hearing her as well. Before I introduce her, let me just make one announcement because it's important everybody knows that starting October 6th, Radio Rehab will be back to airing from 10 in the morning to 11 in the morning. So please be aware in October we will be on at 10 to 11 instead of 11:30 to 12:30. So I wanted to announce that. And during the show, we will get to some of our folks that write in and ask questions. We'll get to those. So this is going to be an exciting hour. Don't hesitate to call in if you have questions or comments. My sister went through watching my addiction affect our parents, her children, and her life and security. And don't let anybody tell you that addiction doesn't affect siblings. But I want to hear her story, and I know you'll be happy to hear her story too, because she's come to Evansville, Indiana, planted a lot of great seeds here, and now lives in Indianapolis, Indiana, but has a lot of heart and people still left here. So I'm going to very thankfully introduce my sister. Hi, Shirley.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Good morning to all of you out there. It's my pleasure and honor to be here this morning. My life started simply enough. My mother had a normal vaginal delivery. That's what I tell everyone. That was normal. And from then on, things took an entirely different twist. Even in my generation, what I was subjected to, it didn't happen very often. My mother and father were divorced when I was 5 years old. So that's going back to 1945. Ooh. And at that time, you never got a divorce. I mean, what I realized much later, even if you were abused, unhappy, whatever, you stuck together. Mm. That's the way it came down in those days. Not to say that's good, but sometimes I think today maybe we don't try hard enough. But back then, it was rare that something like a divorce occurred. And it did leave me, when I look back, with feelings of insecurity. All my friends were married. All my friends' parents were married. It was just like the reader in first grade, Dick and Jane, mm-hmm. and they had two children and a dog named Spot, mm-hmm. and everything was hunky-dory. But that's not necessarily true. And I also realized early on that not every family had a life like, you know, the Dick and Jane parents, children, dog. You know, we all grew up. All families have skeletons in their closet. Mm-hmm. And whether they come out or not is up to the person living there. Mm-hmm. And I have my share, as well as everybody else, that I have spent most of my life ignoring. I didn't want to discuss any skeletons that might be in my closet. So whatever. Life goes on. I grew up. My mother was totally beautiful. She had movie star looks. And sometimes I think those looks hurt her maybe more than they helped her. But she remarried when I was 12, and I was delighted. My stepfather, Lisa's father, was great. Mm-hmm. He had a wonderful personality, which was passed on to my sister through the gene pool. So that was very exciting for me. And I was thrilled. Of course, I moved to Pennsylvania from Indiana, and then I moved to Connecticut for a year. So, you know, I moved around a fair amount of times in my early life. So be it. But, you know, I also, you know, went to Butler University for 3 years, and then I met my husband, and I was the one who really never had relationships. I had a lot of dates. We dated a lot, but nobody really serious until I met my husband. So I proposed to him when he told me he was going to Florida for an intern program, and because in those days you just didn't pick up and go with your boyfriend or your significant other, etc.
Right.
So we were married on my 21st birthday. Which,
jeez, that's young.
Too young. I never finished my senior year. I had my 3 children. I was devoted to my marriage because of my parents' failed marriage. Also, my mother's parents were divorced. And I said, you know, that is not going to happen to me. I made it my lifelong occupation to make sure that this marriage was sound and that my children grew up in a loving environment. It was very, very important to me. Mm-hmm. That's me, you know.
You accomplished that goal.
I did accomplish that goal, but I look back sometimes and think I was too immersed in it. I put my feelings aside many times, my wants, my desire to make sure my husband was all right and happy, and make sure my children were. And all through the years, that's what I did. And when my husband abruptly died, he committed suicide, I had no identity. I didn't really know who I was when things settled down, that is. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know anything. I was really lost in my head. I had to figure out who I was and pull things together, which took time. And I will backtrack for a minute. As my girls were in their teen years and, you know, the women's lib movement started in the 60s, there wasn't a day that went by that I told them, you must have a profession. You go to, you know, school, you go to a university, and you'd be able to support yourself. Because an ex-husband is not obligated these days to take care of his ex-wife forever.
Well, you definitely have pushed independence on all of us girls.
So I felt it was very, very important
that
to me.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was a goal. That.
You accomplished it.
I accomplished it. I did.
But surely, do you think a lot of women of that, your generation, were selfless? Because all of your friends are about their husband and children as well.
Yeah, you know
you all are a selfless
group. We were raised a certain way. We were raised that as an adult, you marry probably in your early 20s. There was no emphasis on women having a profession. A homemaker was a great profession,
right,
which it is. I just think it's great that women have choices now.
Yes.
They can say, I don't want children, which was unheard of in early, you know, back in the 50s. I mean, you just never would make a remark like that. And you would have children and not be the best parents in the world because, truthfully, you didn't want any. But society, the mores, you've got to have the family, the stereotype family.
Yes.
So
And
now it's different. You know,
right,
you don't have to get married if you don't want to. I think more women are independent than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to backtrack a lot, so you're going to have to bear with
That's
me
great.
In the
no.
audience. But when my parents divorced and I was five, that began my very, very long relationship with my grandmothers, who their influence in my life is unmeasurable. Immeasurable.
Grandparenting.
Absolutely. I don't know what I would have done without them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So they came in.
I was very, very fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Very fortunate to have them in my life. Definitely.
Do you think then that grandparents can fill those holes?
I think they can help a lot.
Yeah.
Because they're family. Family is important. And if you and my mother, who was, you know, with Miss Movie Star, went to work. She had a social life. She's busy. You know, she went out a lot and then subsequently, you know, remarried and had, you know, my sister and, oh my goodness, maybe, I don't know, 10 and a half months later, she tells me she's going to have another baby, and I'm going to tell you. I wouldn't tell any of my friends. I was so embarrassed at the time. I thought, oh, my God, you know, she's already had a baby. What does she need another one?
Within a year.
Yeah, they're doing it. Why are they doing it, you know, in my head? And here comes
right.
number two. It's like, hello, we wanted another baby.
Oh, God. They had to hurry and have them quick.
That was funny. Sure, they were in those days. I mean, they were in their 30s. They
right.
were considered rather old for parents, you know.
True, yes.
For having children. So it was that.
So
was
your whole life changed again.
Oh, it was
two
fine.
Baby siblings in adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
What a story. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're talking to my sister Shirley about her life and the things that have shaped her. We will be right back.
Did you know drug and or alcohol problems are one of the major reasons why people lose their jobs, their health, and even their families? Don't let this happen to you. There is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. At Brentwood Meadows, we provide compassionate, professional, effective treatment. Our goal is to help get you back feeling healthy and happy once again. Call us today at 812-858-7200 for a free evaluation. This may be one of the most important calls you'll ever make.
If you are suffering from depression or anxiety, please listen to this important message. You are not alone and there is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. Brentwood Meadows is a new state-of-the-art facility located in a private setting in Newburgh, Indiana. At Brentwood Meadows, we understand that feelings of anxiety, loss of control, loneliness, fear, and confusion affect your life and the lives of those around you. Take control. Call Brentwood Meadows for a free, no-obligation evaluation. Call 812-858-7200.
Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville has extended the Labor Day event one more week. Get up to 20% off select items throughout the store. Or up to 5 years, no interest. Sofas, just $3.49. Dining sets, an incredible $3.99. Plus, get $100 off any King or Queen Ashley Sleep mattress set. Up to 20% off select items or up to 5 years, no interest. Hurry in. It's the final days at Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Subject to credit approval. Minimum purchase required.
Labor Day on A&E.
What is going on here?
Start compression. He's arresting.
From executive producers Tony and Ridley Scott, A&E presents Coma.
He did not go into a coma because of some reaction.
Don't let them put you under.
This is human sacrifice.
That's exactly the right word.
Coma, a two-night television event. Labor Day at 9, 8 central on A&E.
They're not really alive. They're not dead either.
In the 30 seconds you'll listen to this radio ad, you could crack open a delicious Pepsi and log on to an epic celebration of the 25th anniversary of Michael Jackson's Bad.
Woo!
You could call up your friends.
Who?
It's Michelle, dude.
And rock out to the King of Pop with performances from some of today's hottest artists live via Twitter. In this 30 seconds, you didn't do any of that. But you can August 29th when Pepsi Billboard Summer Beats celebrates Michael Jackson's Bad 25. Join the event at twitter.com/Pepsi. Pepsi, live for now. Look for Michael Jackson's Bad 25 out September 18th.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, a dynamic program for those who have been touched by alcohol and or substance abuse. Our lines are always open, so pick up the phone right now and call into the program at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab is brought to you by Brentwood Meadows. Brentwood Meadows, there's hope, there's help. And now, here's Lisa.
Interview with my sister Shirley, who is my hero and role model in life, no doubt about it. She dealt with my addiction and dealt with it beautifully, and you know, she's sharing now the things that have shaped her in her life. And she, you know, you think your siblings have, they're perfect when you're addicted. Everybody else looks perfect, and it's just been incredible to learn that my sister is human. She's been shaped a lot by life's hardships as well, and has had to continue developing her own identity. So we're going to go back to talking about, she talked about how important grandparenting is to her, because I think for any of us, when we get clean and sober or come out of a depression or whatever crisis in our life, it's so, we do have to kind of reestablish our identity, and we have to really depend on the relationships and the friendships and the family that we have. So Shirley, you were talking about how important grandparenting was. And then I know once you reached adolescence, what you saw as the drug of despair was tobacco and smoking.
Oh my. Well, but my mother was a refugee from Germany. And I think the minute she landed on the shores of the USA, she picked up a cigarette. My mother was a chain smoker and
a drug user too.
Well, she had issues later in life in her 30s and 40s, so she was taking all kinds of medications, which today they're so improved. But back then,
they're pretty addicting still.
There weren't a lot anyway.
Mm-mm.
But aside from that, her smoking really in her, by the time she was 50, I think she was smoking around the clock.
Yes.
Because she had sleep
issues.
Three
packs a day.
She just could not function without cigarettes. That my stepfather, and my mother was 57. I lost her at 57. My stepfather, whom I adored, was, 53, 52? Camel smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother's sister, my aunt, who I was crazy about, lung cancer. She was gone when she was 62 or 63. All three smoke-related deaths. Now, the thing is that my mother's parents lived a normal life. My grandfather lived to be 90,
yeah.
And my grandmother was 84. But here are their children gone at a considerably young age. I'm lucky I don't have lung cancer from secondhand smoke.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly grew up in it. And
it's an addiction.
I smoked when I was 17, my senior year in high school.
You did?
Oh, I did, and I thought I was the hottest thing on the planet.
I bet
I'm
you were.
You.
You still
oh,
are.
Oh, my goodness.
With a cigarette
we
in hand.
We were the hot ones with the cigarettes, I'm telling you. But after I always make this fun of my husband is that when we were dating, he lit my cigarettes, and once we were married, he kept throwing them away. And my husband was a physician, and he said he was going to take me down to the medical center and show me smoker's lungs. He said, you would not believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally kicked the habit when I was 23. I gave them up for good.
Do you think you were addicted to them?
Sure.
So you understand addiction.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to give it up.
Yes.
Very hard.
So, were you around? Well, yeah, it was part of the culture. So See, now it's all alcohol and marijuana, but back then it was alcohol and tobacco.
Yeah, but there's still plenty of tobacco out there.
Right, that's true.
There's plenty of smokers, and if you go overseas, you really see a lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot. People smoke a lot. So, and it's a terrible addiction.
It is.
But all addictions are terrible.
Yes. But you weren't raised by parents or grandparents that, well, our parents were addicted to tobacco, but you didn't see any drunkenness or drug.
No.
And our mother's drug problem was prescribed medications.
Prescription medications.
And we're seeing that come back now, the
with
pill mills.
It's with a vengeance.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The doctors write them out like candy. They don't even think about people getting addicted to that stuff. And our mother definitely was, but she didn't call it that then.
No. Well, she needed her medications to function normally.
Yeah.
But they don't prescribe those anymore because,
no,
thankfully, for people who have depression or obsessive compulsive behavior, mm-hmm, et cetera, even schizophrenia, they're wonderful drugs out,
yes,
now.
And a lot
they're
of help.
Really help. Yes, and help. And there are support groups, and I will touch base on that. When my husband committed suicide, I was called like within a week or two asking me if I wanted to participate in a group. You know.
They came to you?
Called me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I was very incensed. I felt
intruded upon.
I did. It was too soon. Mm-hmm. I could. And actually, as far as that goes, the death, my husband's death, I just, the cause of his death, the suicide, I put out of my mind. I'm like, I was almost in denial. In fact, I really was in denial. I mean, I knew what happened, of course, but basically, mm-hmm, I was in denial, and there were comments like, oh, you know, you're in denial, that's not good. Wrong.
I know, I told somebody,
wrong,
my sister's going to write about denial is good.
Denial
is good.
For a while.
It's
healthy, I think.
I
it's
think
healthy
you're right.
For your mind and body.
Till it can clean this
until
out.
Until you can process it.
Yes.
The way it needs to be processed. And it took quite a few years for me to come to terms with it. Quite a few years. But then, you know, I did. Because sooner or later you have to.
And this was in 1993. The word suicide was not even said yet.
No.
Now, oh my God, there's suicide coalitions.
Well, it's more out of the closet now.
Right. Well, depression is too.
Yes.
Because it's really depression that killed him, don't you think?
I do, but there are also, don't forget, my husband, you know, was a physician. His brother died. My husband was almost 19. His brother was 18. And back then, you could sign up in the Army for a six-month deal. Meet your
and
military.
Get your school paid for.
And whatever. They, you know, it was like during, I want to say possibly during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. One of the, you know, mm-hmm, but back
yeah,
then,
the GI Bill.
There was the draft. And
right.
You also had, you know, you could avoid it, mm-hmm, by this plan of serving 6 months. So what happened is his brother was on his way back to base. He was 18 years old. He was killed in a car accident. Mm-hmm. It tore the family apart. Back then, there wasn't grief counseling. There was nothing. You were on your own. So each family member had to figure it out for themselves. My mother-in-law did tell me that she was really a candidate for confinement. Back in those days, you say, oh, she really lost her mind. She lost it.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, I came down one morning and Lyle said to me, well, don't Winnie and I count anymore. And she said, it was like someone slapped me across the face. And she pulled herself out.
Mm.
And, you know,
she had to redefine herself,
they
too.
Everyone in the family, and I think my father-in-law went a different way, my mother-in-law went a different way. Lyle, you know, he had all the demons, but they never really left.
Mm.
Even, you know, in...
Even with all his success.
Oh, absolutely.
Pain goes with you.
Pain. A lot of pain. Definitely.
And nowhere to go with it.
And nowhere to go.
Because like you said, you all just didn't talk about it.
No. But, you know, I have friends that have lost children. You know, you never get over that. You can't.
Yeah.
But you can, you do start living again, because that's what life is for. It's for the living.
Right, but you and Lyle started taking care of his parents in a way. He became the parent, didn't he?
And it was too much. He was too involved to the point that it damaged him, definitely. Just, it's a long story.
Well, and that's what trauma does to families.
Trauma, absolutely.
Whether it's addiction or suicide or a car losing a family member.
Absolutely.
So, did you know that you had left a woundedness of your own and kind of married into another deep woundedness?
No. Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding? My husband, here he is, a senior medical student, a Jewish doctor. What are you talking about? Oh, you have reached the pinnacle of eligibility, males. You know, that is like the best, you know.
That's right. Top of the food chain.
Top of the food chain. He is going to marry me, he's my knight in shining armor on his big horse, and he's going to take care of me.
And he did.
But this is what I learned the hard way. That's what my grandmother used to tell me, you learn the hard way, and she's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is responsible for themselves. This is the lesson that I learned. I was so young when I was married, and I was very immature. I still think I am in many ways, but beside that. And I just dumped what I thought everything on him, and he'd make it all good for me. And everything would be just super duper like in a movie. Mm-hmm. And that was
fantasy.
The life I was going to lead. I was positive.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now I'm 72, and all these thoughts through the years, and I realized, you know what? It's not up to your husband, quote unquote, to go into your mind and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have issues, you seek help, professional help, which people do, you know, now, and there's so much availability of it.
Right.
But you have to work it out yourself, basically.
Yes.
It's got to come from within.
Yeah.
You've got to get comfortable with yourself.
As we change and
evolve.
And
we try.
Right.
But that's life, too. There's always an unsettling issue, you know. Everybody has a story, Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
I've hardly met anyone that didn't.
But it sounds like throughout your life, you've kind of had to redefine yourself. And
constantly.
Then at Lyle's death, you were in your adulthood. Your children were raised and married. And it's like, okay.
Now what?
I'm not the wife. Because it's a couple's world. Our mother told us that when Dad died. So your identity.
You know, I will tell you, when you're talking about the couple's world.
Was that hard for you?
It is, but I'm
widowed.
From that point, no, because by that time, it's 1993.
Yeah.
Women were emancipated. And you can be single, and I mean, I hang around with my married friends in Indianapolis. I have my single friends in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. I'm very comfortable in my single shoes.
It's
necessary to have someone in your life and sacrifice, because the he or she might not live up to near all your expectations, but you don't want to be alone because everyone says that's worse. But trust me,
it's not so bad.
Not so bad.
Yeah.
Not so bad at all.
Well, I think because in your loss and losses, because we've lost a lot of people.
We have.
You have continued to re-identify yourself and bring yourself to more and more of a place of independence rather than dependence.
Right.
What made you do that? Do you think that was your grandmother's seeds back when you were five?
You know, I think I've had to start over a lot of times.
Yeah.
And even after my mother's divorce, we moved in with her mother, so I went to a different school. And I even went, my mother moved to Chicago briefly, so I had to go to a school there. Then we came back to Indianapolis, and it was another school there. And then it kind of...
Readapting.
But then I finally wound up at a public grade school that I went for several years. So that was good. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. My mother was working. We had an apartment, and you know, and things were fine.
Was that okay. During integration?
Oh, that's a very interesting story. Yes, but this was, I'm trying to figure out the date, and I know that this radio station, the lovely owner is Afro-American, and the audience is Afro-American.
Yes.
So here's my story with integration. Because
and Marvelline, you know, helps us with this show, too.
Well, I know. Who gave you Marvelline's phone number?
Oh, that's true. You did.
Don't forget that.
Does Marvelline know this story you're about to share with us? I don't know if she does.
I don't think so. But I'm going to say roughly I was 10, maybe. 1950, and I could have been 11. I'm not sure. So we start school, first day of school. And there might have been a half a dozen Afro-American children. And, you know, there were like three
because
in my
of
class.
Integration.
Yes. But this is before 1954.
Okay.
So there was a girl in my class. And I'm sure she's not listening, but her name, well, this is back in Indianapolis, so it's irrelevant.
Jean.
We used to go to Shortridge High School to have lunch. And I invited her to join my group. I told her what we did. And so we go to Shortridge High School for lunch, our little group. And there again, we just thought we were something. You know, eating lunch in the high school cafeteria.
Big time.
So her lunch was 36 cents. I don't know why this memory stayed. She didn't have a penny. So I lent her the penny for her lunch.
One penny?
Yeah, she had
the 35 cents.
She had 35.
Huh.
So we go back to school. I go the next day, and these students, the black Afro-American students, they're gone. But I'm not sure why, you know.
You mean
but they
have
to go
school?
Back to their other school.
Oh, wow.
So that year goes by, and then it's the next year, and it's the first day of school again. And it could have been 51, and it might have been 1952. And the group comes back to our school, where, P.S., quickly let me say, they stayed. They were, you know, lovely children. We had no issues in the school at all. And Jean looks for me to find me right away because she wanted to give me back the penny I lent her that year ago. And she's a very special girl.
Memory to you, yeah.
She was very, very popular at my grade school. She just, you know, wasn't an issue of color. She just had the personality. And, she was one of the group, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, lovely.
Isn't
lovely
it, so
girl.
People have really
so
impacted your...
So my experiences mm-hmm. are very, very positive.
Yes.
And I grew up in a home where my father, my mother, never had a bad word to say about
anybody.
Any minority, ever.
No, no
so
we're
I,
lucky.
I was fortunate.
We are really lucky.
I was never raised to hate.
No.
Or, you know, look down on
anybody.
Any group.
Yeah. I'm so grateful for that
yes.
we didn't have that. And you,
values,
you never were that
right
way. You and Lyle
were there.
Right,
so
right.
That, in my crazy home life, they were there.
Good values.
Yes, yes.
And they've made a difference.
They make a difference.
Those values. Mm-hmm. And you've instilled them in all of us.
Right.
Those values.
Try.
It sounds like, though, that you made that your job. When you married Lyle and had a family, your profession was to be a wife and mother.
Absolutely.
And instill independence and security.
Trying to prove that it could work.
A marriage.
That I would have a marriage that worked, even though my mother didn't, my aunt didn't, which was her sister who was divorced and remarried, and my grandparents. That's a lot of divorce back then. A lot.
Would you, in looking back, say you accomplished your goal of bringing security to your family?
I think I did.
I think you did, too.
But I also, in doing that, I was so fixated that the other side of me that wanted certain things or, you know, where I would have to branch out on my own. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. And as I said earlier, that's why when my husband died, I was really at a loss about my identity. Yeah. What identity?
Yeah.
I don't have one.
No one would have known it, Shirley, to be around you, that you had that struggle going on.
I still struggle with it.
Yeah. It's probably something we all are always looking at.
Exactly.
But you're,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, coming out of a tragedy like that is not easy.
No.
And he was your knight in shining armor.
He absolutely was.
You two looked and...
Told him when he told me he was going to Florida. I mean, I barely had met him. I met him the end of January, and the middle of March he announces he's hightailing it to Miami for his internship. And I told him flat out, either we're married or it's over with. And
ring on my finger or else.
Or else. He said, you mean you wouldn't wait for me for a year? And I said, absolutely not. I'm not patient. Never have been. It's now or never, honey. Take your choice.
Wow. So you were assertive.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
How assertive I was.
Well, you wanted him.
Yes.
You were in love. He was the first one you were really
connected to.
Crazy
about. Mm-hmm.
And 32 years.
Mm-hmm.
Of dancing and having fun.
Most of the time. But then again,
the
every marriage has its issues, too. I mean,
Somebody's calling in. Hold on. You just said marriage has issues. Who's calling? Hello. Welcome to Radio Rehab.
Hi, Cheryl the Pearl.
It's Jane, I think. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, Cheryl, in her eloquence, really touched on the premise of radio rehab, you know, for people like you and I, Lisa, you know, we reach for something outside to give us that sense of comfort in who we are and getting comfortable in our own skin. And Cheryl just talked about, you know, that was what she was faced with.
Mm.
And I just think it's just so profound that she can touch on it and drive that message home to us.
Yeah,
For drugs and alcohol, she had to get comfortable in her own skin and find her own path and who she was. So it's wonderful listening to you, Cheryl. You're just as beautiful on radio as you are in person.
Oh, thank you.
Bye, guys.
Thank you, Wilson. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
So I think what Jane was saying is that you don't have to be addicted to drugs and alcohol to come out of something as a survivor and have to redefine yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. There's so many issues out there.
Well, did you ever think about drinking or drugging through all that? Ooh, how do you
have my moments now? Well, you know, like, I mean, we all have.
You just don't have it in you. We'll take a little break
I'd
here.
I'd rather go shopping.
Yeah,
on
that note, we will take a break and maybe come back and talk about shopping addiction. My sister's addiction. We'll be right back.
Did you know drug and or alcohol problems are one of the major reasons why people lose their jobs, their health, and even their families? Don't let this happen to you. There is help. Real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. At Brentwood Meadows, we provide compassionate, professional, effective treatment. Our goal is to help get you back feeling healthy and happy once again. Call us today at 812-858-7200 for a free evaluation. This may be one of the most important calls you'll ever make.
If you are suffering from depression or anxiety, please listen to this important message. You are not alone and there is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. Brentwood Meadows is a new state-of-the-art facility located in a private setting in Newburg, Indiana. At Brentwood Meadows, we understand that feelings of anxiety, loss of control, loneliness, fear, and confusion affect your life and the lives of those around you. Take control. Call Brentwood Meadows for a free, no-obligation evaluation. Call 812-858-7200.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, a dynamic program for those who have been touched by alcohol and or substance abuse. Our lines are always open, so pick up the phone right now and call into the program at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab is brought to you by Brentwood Meadows. Brentwood Meadows, there's hope, there's help. And now, here's Lisa.
We're laughing because we haven't talked yet about how my sister put up with my addiction, and I plopped here in 1977, and she had this perfect family going on, and here comes this sister that had just overdosed on heroin and was drinking. And did you, I mean, back then, they didn't even know about addictive disorders like they do now.
No,
that must have been so difficult for you.
It was very difficult. But just let, and I'll go back even further. But when Lisa moved to Evansville, well, within that year, she was away at school and calls up and said, "Well, I'm in the hospital. I choked on spaghetti."
Oh my God, she tells me. Well, that was partially true.
So my husband comes home and I told him, he said, "You are very gullible. And where is she?" So somehow I knew the name of the hospital, and he got a hold of, my husband spoke to Lisa's doctor.
That was not a good day for me.
It wasn't. And you know what? I mean, I'm laughing about it now, but it really was... it's just so sad and it, traumatic for me. I've got three children and I've got this addict for a sister. Oh my word, you know. And so we kind of like...
You guys told Mom the truth.
And she was very upset.
Yeah,
but what happened?
Because I didn't
mention
anything about the overdose.
We parted company.
Right.
And it was those days. And sometimes I'd leave money in the mailbox. For
me.
A sandwich.
Yeah, you wouldn't let me in the house.
I wouldn't let her in the house. I would not let her in the house.
Were you scared?
I guess
siblings are scared of addicted.
Who are you running around with?
Right,
you know,
that's true.
What are your friends like? Are they all addicts too? Yeah.
So siblings.
I had my husband put in an alarm system in our house.
You were one of the first to put an alarm system.
Oh, my goodness. But you know what? My sister, God love her. I can't. She's very stubborn. I have to tell this to the audience. But I think that, and she's very tenacious, is what was able for her to kick the habit. Because she is stubborn. God only knows if she gets something in her crawl, it's not going to come out.
But, you know, you stopped enabling me, too. And we talk about that on the show a lot, that families enable us to stay addicted. As long as you were paying my rent and my car insurance and leaving money for me, I didn't hit a bottom. I think when you finally said, "That's enough. Mm-hmm. We're not taking care of you anymore," that's when I realized, oh, my God. All I've got
is just me.
Yes. Yeah, and I tested it, and you caved a few times. But I think you had to stop enabling, which is very hard to do because you want to help.
Oh, well, it's a natural.
Yeah.
That you want to help your family members. And maybe, like Lisa said, there are a whole lot of enablers out there.
Yeah.
It's very hard to cut somebody out of your life. A sister, a child, a husband, whatever.
To detach.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
But thank goodness our relationship has this very, very happy, happy ending.
Oh, my God.
I'm so thrilled to have her clean and sober.
Oh, and I'm grateful to be clean and sober. And she's even come to AA with me and kind of likes it. Somebody's on wanting to ask you a question again. Hold on. Hi, welcome to Radio Rehab.
Hey, Lisa, it's LaTanya. How are you?
Oh, my goodness. Hi, LaTanya.
Good to see you. I'm grateful to be able to talk to you. I didn't get to hear the whole thing, but I heard the last part of me talking about the enabling. I just heard my friend Jane on there, and you know, that enabling is something that we all struggle with, especially when we're dealing with our kids and our families. But I think that it's one of the major things that has to come for us to realize that, you know, we can't do this anymore. I know for me, everybody stopped enabling me and giving me, and I had to do for myself. Then I realized that this was not what I wanted to do, you know, and I ended up in a lot of places I didn't want to end up in. And so today I think that the enabling is probably one of the major things that needs to stop for. I say if you really love somebody, then you need to stop doing that enabling, because that would make them see that, you know. Because I think when we enable it, you know, we think it's okay. everything's okay because we still have what we want. Not necessarily what we need, but what we want.
Right.
So I just wanted to thank your sister for coming on. I think that would be a big trip for my sister, but you know how it goes. Life goes on and things happen that we never think would happen.
Isn't that the truth? Yes. Thank you, LaTanya. You're right. The enabling is a challenge for the family, no doubt about it. Thank you.
You're welcome. You guys have a great day.
Love you. Thank you. LaTanya is a loyal listener and also a member of AA, so she's got family that she loves and has supported her in recovery, too. I guess back when you found out about all this, they didn't even call it addiction, really. You were a bad person, and people thought it was a willpower issue. They just need to stop. If you had enough willpower, you'd stop. I think there wasn't the understanding of it being an illness.
Correct. Well, you know, there's such a different light now on addictions. People are
right.
Have a little more knowledge now. They you know, more understanding.
Yes.
You know, which is very important.
Yes.
Because you can't help someone if you don't understand the nature of their addiction.
Well, we had to deal with a mother that was depressed, and that was hard to deal with.
Oh, sure it was.
Depression's another one people don't understand how to deal with. Right. So Shirley, in closing, now where you are in your life, you have an incredibly beautiful identity now, maybe not within yourself, but you walk the walk, you talk the talk, you live a life that's giving, and you don't ask anything from anybody. What things now keep you going in life?
Well, I think, you know, as we get older, I'm now 72.
You don't
you
look
amass a lot of knowledge along the way. And at 72, I feel like, you know, well, for quite a few years, I do my own thing. And my son always makes a joke and said, Mom's in her selfish state. But a few years ago, around 10 years ago, I was really down in the dumps. And, you know, I felt like I needed to see someone, so my sister recommended a psychologist, and I saw him three times, and I told him, you know, laughingly, kind of, well, my son thinks, you know, I'm in my selfish state. He said, no, it's self-caring.
A self-caring state.
Care.
Yes.
Now, your children, you know, they're raised, you know, whatever. So you've got time and energy to focus on yourself. So, of course, I'm in a better place. The years have gone by.
But that was hard for you to be self-caring because it felt selfish to you.
Foreign.
Yeah.
Kind of. But, you know, heck, I'm enjoying myself now. I don't have any problem being self-caring.
Good.
So, you know, maybe sometimes it's all about me too much. But on the other hand, since I am, you know, living alone, I'm an independent person.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy.
Well, and I think even your friends here that you've stayed close to.
The best.
I think they, too, admire the Shirley Siegel that you are. Definitely.
Well, I have been very blessed, and I've had lovely friends here, and I've had my sister here, which is wonderful. So, and I have a brother in Texas, but he's far away. So, you know, but my sister and I are very, very close. And I do live in Indianapolis now, and I've been blessed again with lovely friends. I stay pretty busy, but I talk to my sister usually
daily.
Every day.
Yes, we do.
We hook up. So.
Thank God. I'm so grateful I have you.
Well,
and somebody to look up
versa.
To and to look to.
Vice versa.
No doubt about it. So we've got a few minutes left, and this is just an audience of all different kinds of folks that are dealing with people they love that are depressed, they love that have run away, they love that are in prison, they love that are addicted, they love that can't stay clean.
Correct.
Any words of wisdom, suggestions to depart on these folks that are just still watching people they love not get better?
You know what? It's a struggle. It's a struggle. And I can't really say anything that would ease their struggle, but they should know they're not alone. And there are support groups, because dealing with an addicted family member, is extremely difficult, and you really, there's what, codependency groups. I mean, there's a lot of groups that would help you. Other people who are in the same shoes as you're in. Now things are such, you can seek the help.
Yes.
It's out there for
yes.
those who need it, and I would urge you to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I think that's good to encourage. And I just saw that Memorial Baptist Church here, Marvelina, I think, is going to have Reverend Brooks on here. They now have a counselor there mm-hmm. for family members or people that are addicted, and it's strictly confidential. And they also have meetings there that are 12-step meetings. So there are places to go
well,
to talk
you know,
to somebody.
Well, and when I went to see the psychologist, I certainly didn't tell anybody. You
yeah.
know, I was still in that secret mode.
Right.
But actually later, you know, maybe a year later or two, you know, whatever, I did. And then all of a sudden a couple of my friends said, oh, well, I went to see somebody because of blah, 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 blah. But you wouldn't. You were still secretive, even though you went.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, I'm only too happy to
now
say that
say
I went
it.
Because it was Dr. Bill McAdams
right.
was wonderful. He
yes.
didn't know me, which was perfect. Didn't know my family. I mean, he knew my sister, but that was it.
Right.
And it was very nice speaking to someone who was totally objective.
Well, and I think people they feel like I'm a private person. I don't want to go out of this home, and this home can be not such a good place, and they can die of that privacy.
Well, but that's a choice.
That's
we all
true.
Have choices.
Yeah, good point.
We all have choices now, and choices that weren't around maybe 25 years ago, whatever.
Yes.
Women have a lot of choices now.
Mm-hmm.
Men have always had some choices, but
mm-hmm.
there again, you know, society, men have maybe like a lot of prescription issues, you know, which is not so visible.
Right.
But they didn't have anyone to turn to like 20 years ago. Or like if you were a physician, you could lose your license. You know, it was very hard. Now that doesn't happen.
Right. Right.
Which is a very good thing. You shouldn't be punished for trying to improve yourself.
Right.
And trying to be healthy. You should be rewarded.
Yes. Yeah. That is a great thing for us to close on. To not die in your own privacy. Reward yourself. Make the choices to reach out and
Rejuvenate yourself.
Yes. Shirley, thank you so much. I know it was hard getting you on here. You are an awesome interview and have so much to share, because really it is all about recovery, is about putting our identity back together and refocusing many times in life. Thank you. I love you to pieces.
I love you too, 99.44% of the time.
Well, good. That's better than the other
way
around.
Good.
That's pretty good. Radio Rehab, thank you for tuning in. Next week, we'll have Judge Meyer and Kevin Groves from the Warwick County DUI Drug Court Program. And I know you all have written in a lot of questions. We'll get to those questions and answers next week with some of our other experts. Shirley, love you. Thank you. And thank you, Melinda, for videotaping us. And thank you, Mr. Landers, for allowing us to have this Radio Rehab show on Saturdays. I think it's been an incredible addition to the community. I always feel better after I've been here. Thanks, Radio Rehab, for tuning in. And don't forget, between now and next Saturday, to do the next right thing.